and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. Real Talk is the show that's here every Tuesday at lunchtime to explore questions large and small. We haven't had a lot of small ones lately. Today's question is kind of large and looming in the background. It's self-care for women. And I have as my guest Dr. Wanda Hunt, who is a doctor of nursing practice and a certified family nurse practitioner. Welcome, Wanda.
Thanks. It's delighted to be here with you, Susan.
It is so good to have you here. And I want to mention to the men who are listening, don't tune out. You might learn something you can use with a significant other or even for yourself. Mm-hmm. So my first question to you, Wanda, is, what is the perfect woman's life? Does she decorate beautifully, keep her home pristine, practice yoga and meditation, get at least 30 minutes of aerobic exercise daily, eat 5 servings of fruits and greens daily, lift weights twice a week, oh, and all this while raising 2.5 happy children and pursuing a successful career? Is that perfection?
Well, you know what I say about perfection.
That is
a prison. Perfectionism is a prison. And so I think that we need to refocus what is perfection for us. You know, my best friend, Dawn Corcoran, says that we are all perfectly imperfect. And so I like to use that when I start talking about self-care and being compassionate with ourselves. We are perfectly imperfect, and we need to be compassionate. So if we're not going to raise the 2.5 children with no problems, emotional, mental, or otherwise,
of course,
and we're going to practice yoga, and you forgot about getting the 8 hours of sleep every night that we need.
Yeah, right. I did forget.
So we're going to have to create that and redefine for ourselves what the perfect life is for a woman or a man. And so I think that it's different for everyone.
You know, self-care, I'm putting that in quotes, is kind of a topic of discussion these days, and it does tend to relate more to women. But one of the things that occurs to me is that self-care, as we define it in the media, is about yoga and exercise and doing things perfectly. You have a slightly different definition of that. What would that be? What would that be?
Well, so, you know, so much of what I know about self-care comes from being perfectly imperfect. I just have to say that. But I think self-care is really learning about self-nurturance, learning about how to put together things in your life that are going to work for you. So I know we've talked a lot about self-care. Mm-hmm. Can I just read one thing that I've put down here? And it kind of goes with self-care. And that is having compassion for yourself and willingness to face the challenge of self-care, even if you have no idea how you're going to do that, how you're going to overcome that challenge. All you really have to do is just know that what you need is going to be there for you. We talked a little earlier before we went on the air about time for ourselves. And I think most of us are afraid of time for ourselves because we look within and we don't see what we need. We think we don't see what we need. But really what we need is there. I was talking to someone just as I came into the studio today, and you know, we were talking about losing weight and exercising. And, you know, although those are forms of self-care externally, and that's great, it does change when you get that, when you start knowing that part of self-care is about that. It's not the totality of self-care, right? When you start doing those things, little things, and start feeling better about how you are handling that, not who you are. Because who you are inherently worthy of self-care. That's huge. So it's not about who you are, but it's about how you're going about being who you are is really what matters, if that makes any sense.
It does. And it makes me want to go back to the concept of time alone.
Yeah.
And being with oneself.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that our culture doesn't really encourage us to listen to our own voices, which might be telling us what we truly need, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
What can you say about that?
Well, so, I want to ask you the question. Why do you think that our culture, tells us to be afraid of what we say to ourselves, or, what we know, what our truth is?
Yeah. Listening to our voices.
Listening to our voices.
Because we're supposed to listen to the voices of our parents, our media.
Particularly our media,
mm-hmm. Our social structure, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think it really goes down to the capitalist economy that measures everything by the dollar. So mm-hmm. as long as we are driven by external demands, mm-hmm. we are more likely to be driven consumers.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty profound, driven by external demands. Mm-hmm. And what you read about being the perfect woman.
Yes.
Look at that again and see what are all of those things external to be measured, how perfect we are. Mm-hmm. Put away the measuring stick. The measuring stick doesn't work. Even the measuring tape doesn't work,
The one that goes around the waist?
Yeah, that one. Or the thigh. Uh-huh. It doesn't make us feel good about ourselves. So, we have to find ways to reframe where we're at in life. Does it matter? What really matters? What we feel, what we desire, what we want to have in our lives, does that really matter? I think it's just really question after question. And what it comes down to, regardless of the circumstance that you're in, rich, poor, middle class, beautiful in our standards of today, not beautiful in our standards of today, different, all of those measuring sticks, we have to put those away and know that we really do have what we need. Yeah, it's good to read something in Oprah Magazine or, Martha Stewart or whoever is your icon. It's great to read, in the little corner, list of things to do, to have a waist of 28 inches,
And right.
That's not going to happen, but... I think that we all want a checklist, right? We all want a checklist of what to do to be perfect, what to do to meet the standard, when really what we need to do is to create the checklist, not ask for one.
Create the standard.
Create our own standard.
So stop comparing ourselves.
Stop comparing.
To others. How do we get to that?
How do we
machete through
okay whoa
how do we chop through the jungle of mm-hmm. other voices screaming mm-hmm. at us and get to our own?
I think it has something to do with learning to be compassionate with yourself. So I don't know if you know about Brené Brown, but she is one of my heroes. She is a social worker. She teaches at a university in California, and she's done a lot of work on vulnerability, shame, compassion. And what she says is it takes a lot of courage to be compassionate with ourselves, right? And she goes on to talk about where the word courage comes from. Cur is Latin for heart. And so living an open-hearted, wholehearted way takes a lot of courage and compassion. So opening yourself up to the vulnerability of being imperfect is the way that we come around to taking care of ourselves.
And you talked about perfection being a prison.
Mm-hmm.
And before we came on the air, you mentioned where perfectionism comes from.
Yeah.
Would you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So what I know from reading about perfectionism, because I am in recovery from perfectionism, it's not a 12-step program, but could be, is perfectionism comes from shame and not feeling good enough, not feeling like we measure up. Right? That's inherent in our language, in our mm-hmm. conversation, isn't it? Shame about who we are, where we've come from, what we have, what we do, how we do it. When really, really, truly, we are inherently worthy. And so shame really has no place. Now, how do you get rid of shame?
Yeah.
Being open-hearted, being really who you are. Making it okay that it's good enough. you know, knowing that you are good enough. So it's hard work. I'm not saying that,
that is,
you know,
hard work.
This is not a checklist.
Right.
Didn't promise you one.
I was going to ask for that.
Get one. Yeah.
So what's the first step?
Yeah.
To being compassionate.
So I think the first step to being compassionate to yourself is practicing gratitude.
Ah.
Right? So being grateful for what you have. So Sarah Ban Breathnach wrote this great book back in the 80s. It's called The Day Book of Comfort and Joy, I think. And she talks about finding your authentic self. And when you do that without shame, without being anything other than who you are, your authentic self. And I think that is the first key, is being grateful for what you have, wherever you're at, and then becoming aware of self. Who are you? Do you really know who you are? So it's work to find that out, you know?
Yeah, and you say being grateful for what we have.
What we already have.
And that is not what our house is holding.
No.
That is being grateful for the qualities within ourselves.
That's right.
That we admire.
That's right. And, you know, you can cultivate those. It's not just what you're born with, mm-hmm. right? You can learn those things. We learn things all the time. The human mind is limitless for what we can learn. So we may not be giving you a checklist, but we may be planting a seed to say, okay, what do I need to do? I think that's different for everybody.
Well, how do we know when we are in our most authentic selves? Are there signals?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Who are you when you're alone? Who are you when you're walking the dogs and thinking, mm-hmm. right? Who are you when you're cooking supper? Who are you at work? When you throw your head back and laugh out loud, is that really who you are? yeah, probably so. Yeah. And then you can go and look in the mirror and say, this is really who I am. So how do we know? I think it's when we have this comfort, just being comfortable with ourselves. I think that's when we're most who we are. So how do you cultivate that if you've never been that? I think it takes time alone.
Yeah.
Looking within.
We keep going back to that.
We do, don't we? Yeah.
So that's definitely one of the self-care practices.
Yeah, asking for that. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead. Asking for that.
So asking for time alone is really difficult for women in our society.
Yes.
What are we told? To put it in our day book, in our calendar, in our phone, like an appointment, so that we can spend time. Well, that's a great tool. We can do that. Some women find that they don't have time to do that, or feel like they don't have time to do that because they're so busy taking care of other people. So start small. Get up 15 minutes early and just stand and look at yourself in the bathroom mirror and find something to be grateful for, right? Start small, somewhere that you can like get a hook in, you know, and just hang on to that. And then start reading people who inspire you. You know, I love, you know, Brené Brown is awesome. TED Talk on vulnerability and shame and being open-hearted. Those are great resources. Sarah Ban Breathnach, even though she's an author in the 80s, you know, she's still relevant today. There are other people. Oh, one of my very favorite authors of all time is Melody Beatty. And so this book, Language of Letting Go, I've been reading it since 1992. And it's
true. What you preach.
It's true. And it's about how to demonstrate self-love and responsibility for yourself, how to demonstrate that in your life. So, you know, Melody talks about self-care not being an indulgence. For us, it's not being selfish. It's about learning to love the person that you are. Yeah.
You are listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and I'm here with my guest, Dr. Wanda Hunt. We're talking about self-care for women, and we can do this thanks to the generosity of Windermere Vashon Realty. They make all our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Wanda, you were alluding to my mind, to the notion of productivity in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
That we were saying, I think you said Melody Beattie was saying that self-care is not selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it seems to me when you talk about the challenges of self-care, that one of those challenges for women in the United States anyway is that taking time for oneself is not, quote, productive. We are supposed to be productive at every moment.
Mm-hmm.
How do we fight that?
Yeah, I think that we have to reframe that for ourselves first, making that a priority. I know when I started, when I very first started trying to learn to meditate, you know, I would set the timer. I had my cushion, you know, I went as far as, you know, to, you know, like put earplugs in, you know, trying to find my center and be like this guru person. And what I realized was really all I needed to do was just sit quietly with my hands folded and be alone and just try to be in the moment, be in the present moment. So I think we have to reframe quote-unquote non-productive time as really the most productive time that we have. If we do not take care of ourselves, we have nothing to give from, right? And it's really about, self-care is really about giving and receiving, not to others, but to ourselves, right? So we give ourselves time and we receive these gifts of intuition, of awareness, of trusting ourselves, of being able to, you know, go throughout our day with this little nugget of our being our true self in those 15 minutes of whenever we sat to be alone. It really does help ground you and fight that that voice out there that's saying you have to be productive. Yeah, I know some of us are in jobs where, you know, we have to do this much work and this much time. And if you don't do this much work and this much time, then you're not worth your salt.
That's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's
you
not
failed.
True.
Yeah.
That's right. Not true. Sorry. That's not true. I think we can be more productive if that's what we're called to do by being more of ourselves. Right.
Finding that place where you are most authentically yourself.
Yourself. Yes. Yeah.
I think that's hard for anybody in this culture. But one of the things that occurs to me is that the demands on women in this culture are somehow different from the demands on men. How would you characterize those differences?
So the differences really come into play from you know, what, two centuries being in this country of being in roles, you know, having woman has her place, right, in the home or in the workplace, taking care of children, specific things that the responsibilities kind of fall on the side of being female in the society. We are not man bashing, so I want to make that perfectly clear. I think that the roles of men give them a different way to be in the world. And men do not really have to account for the time that they spend away from work like women do. Their non-productive time is structured very differently because the roles and demands of those roles are different. Now, I think we have to give credence to women who are single mothers and are doing both jobs,
yes.
Right? I mean, I think, But as far as I see, the differences for women are that they have responsibilities that are not usually assigned to men. And just that alone can keep a woman from taking care of herself.
Well,
does that...
This may be a stereotypical example.
I think so.
Generally, if a man is finished working, he can come home, and home is a sanctuary.
Yeah.
Home is a sanctuary where he might want to cook dinner himself as a creative outlet, or someone else is cooking dinner for him, but he can relax.
Mm-hmm.
A woman who's probably working comes home from work, and home is not a sanctuary. Home is job number two or maybe three.
Mm-hmm.
She's got to put the dinner on the table or make sure that people are eating, make sure that people are meeting their schedules, manage their schedules, do whatever cleaning has to be done, laundry, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And if she's not actually doing it, she's having to manage it and make sure that the team, the family, does their chores. And they wait for her to give them their orders rather than, in many cases, taking initiative. Now, I'm sure that's a stereotypical example, and I'm going to hear about that. But it seems to me that sanctuary is a harder thing for women to find when you talk about time alone. So this one of the self-care things that the media has celebrated is take a day at the spa. Well, does it have to be that if I don't have the time or the money to go? What else can I do?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's really important for women to create rituals for themselves, okay? So creating a space in the midst of doing all those things that you have to do to have a special tea, to have a special chocolate that you love, right? Because you're worth it, right? If you have to have children with you and take a walk, reframe it. You know, I think as I heard you talk, I'm just thinking, wow, that is hard stuff, right? Oh, how exhausting. I'm exhausted just hearing you say that, right? So then you say, how can we alleviate all of that? And I think, you know, intellectually, I say, well, let's just reframe it. Right? You're doing it out of the love of your heart for your family. Nobody can do it as good as I can do it. What is that? Perfectionism.
That's perfection.
So, right? So, yeah, so that's the prison that we put ourselves in. So I think letting go of some of this is really important. And you know, what you read, I go back to what you read at the very beginning, you know, of doing all these things to be the perfect, you know, woman. I think we have to learn to let go and loosen up and soften around the edges some of those things. Maybe it's not going to be perfect. Maybe the towels are not going to be folded and in the linen closet exactly how you want them. Maybe they're going to be shoved in there. Can you sleep at night? I don't know. Sometimes I can't, but, you know, but you have to choose some things to let go of so that you can create space for yourself. And I don't know what that's going to be. And, you know, I can only imagine some woman out there listening going, oh, wow, I wish I had that life, right? That I could create time for myself,
right?
When really, I don't want to get up 15 minutes early because I got to bed, you know, 2 hours late because the kid had a school project or whatever. So maybe you can't take care of yourself that day. But creating space for yourself within the day, a cup of tea, a special, you know, something that you love to have for yourself, having, you know, your nails done and making that a priority. And allowing your family or whoever your family is, not just, you know, spouse and children, but whoever your family of choosing is, to know I'm doing this to take care of myself because I know I'm worth it and I'm good enough for this is really a step forward. So whatever it is that you find that you want to do, maybe it's to read, maybe it's to watch a TV show, maybe whatever it is. I think it's really important to say this is important to me, not to be afraid of doing that. This is important to me, and I really need to do this. How can you help me to do this and not be that silent martyr any longer?
Oh, yeah. Martyrs are, I heard someone once say, anything that can be martyred isn't worth saving.
Say that again?
Anything that can be martyred is not necessarily worth keeping or saving.
Oh, so, that's really good.
Don't be a martyr.
Yeah. So, you know, martyr is really about self-victimization. And sometimes to be the victim makes us feel righteous, okay? And I think righteousness has a place for women in our society. I mean, goodness, would we even have had, you know, women's lib without becoming righteously indignant?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But I think it's really... you know, about saying I'm worth it. That's really key. And knowing that enough that other people know that too.
You know, when you talk about self-victimization, I was trying to think of the source of that. Where does that come from? When we allow ourselves to be victims, are we saying to the world, see, I told you so. Mm-hmm. This doesn't work. And are we afraid to say, I need help? I'll be a victim because I can't say, help me.
So once again, that brings up the word shame for me.
Right.
Right. So it is a place to reside. Victimhood is a place to reside. And as long as you stay there and keep secret what you're ashamed of and what's keeping you there, then you can't move forward, right? So, you know, we have a lot of people who could be victims in our society.
Truly victims.
True victims, right. Absolutely. You know, women in domestic violence situation, men in domestic violence situation,
yes.
Children who are exploited and sexually abused grow up to be either adults who have somehow made their way or adults who are victims in their life. So I think, you know, part of self-care is getting to a place where you can be self-aware enough and have some insight that you can say, I do need help. Throwing off that shame is probably one of the hardest things. And I continue to work on that.
Sure.
As a woman in our society today. You know, I was raised in the South. I was raised Southern Baptist, you know.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. So I like to say about that, I was healed from that hypocrisy. But, you know, I had to tell myself that to move on because it was so hurtful to me. And so I think finding a way out of whatever keeps you prisoner, if it's shame, self-doubt, which is shame-based, fear, which is shame-based, you know, not able to be compassionate to yourself, which is shame-based because you're not good enough. You know, so much of it goes back to shame and fear. I think becoming aware of that is the first step. Self-awareness is the self step, the first step.
You know, and I hear you say that. Mm-hmm. Fear, victimization, et cetera, shame. And I wonder why that is so pervasive in our American culture. And that takes me back to the media. How much do you think the media is responsible for? In other words, is it a reflection of our society or is it creating our society? Marshall McLuhan asked that question too.
And so ask the question again.
Is media creating our society and our values, mm-hmm. or is it a reflection of those?
Both. I think it's all about the bottom line, right?
Yep.
And we had talked earlier before we went on air about the industry, right? We suck fat out of our, you know, bottom and put it in our lips. And, you know, that Brene Brown says, oh my gosh, in 100 years, I hope our society goes, oh wow. You know, we do things that we do because we are, feel like we're not good enough. So our media does sculpt, actually, I use the word sculpt,
yes.
Right? Really does sculpt that, really does change, our buying habits, our healthcare habits, you know, our beauty habits, all for the bottom line. And I'm not saying I don't think we need those products, some of those products, but...
But we get to decide how much.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wanda Hunt, I want to thank you so very much. We're out of time.
Can I say one thing?
Yes.
So I just want to say, get deliberate, get inspired to make new choices, and get going, and don't let perfectionism be your prison.
That is self-care. And thank you for listening to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host here every Tuesday at lunchtime and every Friday at 6 p.m. If you have a question you'd like us to explore on Real Talk, send your question to realtalk@voiceofvashon.org. And thank you so much for listening.